Broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to heritageradionetwork.org. Today's program has been brought to you by Hearst Ranch, the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. For more information, visit HearstRanch.com.
On Thursday, and that means it's time to meet your maker. This is your host, Rachel Wharton. Today, our guest is Kelly Fox. He's the fourth generation maker of what is generally agreed to be the most important ingredient in a chocolate egg cream. It's Fox's You Bet Chocolate Soda. Kelly, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you.
How are you doing? Oh, of course. I know you've probably told the story several hundred thousand times, but I would love if you would just give us a little bit of the history of the company that your, was it your great-great-grandfather founded in the early 1900s?
We were established in 1900. Makes it nice and easy.
Yes.
My great-grandfather, and he actually hired his father. So technically, I guess that makes me the fifth generation.
Oh, cool.
He hired his father to work with him, and they were making fruit toppings, fruit syrups, and chocolate syrup locally in the Brooklyn area. And then my grandfather came into the company, and they moved to our current facility, probably in the early 30s, I would guess, or 40s.
Is this East New York?
This is in East New York. We're in Brownsville.
Cool.
Same location that we've been in since pretty much our inception.
What did your great grandfather do? Like, why? Where were they from? Why did they start making fruit toppings?
I wish I could answer that question. I've asked my parents that one before, and I don't even think they know. You know, unfortunately, my grandfather on my father's side passed away when I was very young.
Uh-huh.
So one of the many questions I never actually got a chance to ask around was what possessed them to think to start a soda and syrup company.
Right. I mean, people were getting a lot. Everyone was getting seltzer delivered at that point, I imagine.
I think this actually predates seltzer.
Oh, yeah, 1900.
So I think that it was more for the local food market, and I don't know. All I know is that this business used to exist in 1900 in my great-grandfather's basement. They had wooden paddles and wooden vats, and they would stir it and deliver everything by horse-drawn carriage.
Do you still have any of the things that they used to make it with?
No, that stuff's all long gone. Oh, well. First thing I did when I started working here about 11 years ago was I wandered through the place. I started going and taking an inventory of stuff and finding, you know, was there anything tucked away in some hidden nook or cranny? And I found a couple of things, but nothing that predates my grandfather. There were things that he made, which I found fascinating. I mean, he made when this business used to be for the luncheonettes and the ice cream parlors,
mm-hmm.
and he made all of these beautiful scalloped glass with foil-backed portraits. And they were Fox's, You Bet, Fox Syrups, you know, pictures that were basically, it was a piece of glass with a foil frame on the back of it.
Uh-huh.
And he decided that they were too nice. He didn't want to give them to any of the customers. And so he gave some of them away and had an entire closet full. Unfortunately, most of them fell apart.
Oh.
I have
the
one.
Foil fell off. So they would have just been to display on the wall, or was it?
Yeah, absolutely. It would have been a sign for a luncheonette.
To have it proudly serve, yeah. You Bet chocolate, all flavors of. How many? So what do you produce these days, and how much?
We make, I like to tell people the easiest answer to that is close your eyes and pick a flavor from anise to watermelon and everything in between. You know, the chocolate syrup is a portion of our market, but we sell primarily to the institutional food wholesale. And everything from cola to Italian ice base to slush syrups to pretty much you name it, ice cream toppings and everything in between.
So and is the chocolate syrup still like one of your biggest sellers, or is it just all equal these days?
It's pretty much all equal these days. I think the chocolate syrup is still one of the main things that we're known for. I mean, you got over 100 years of history that people really recognize us for, and it's one of the things that people go, oh, I remember. And I get a lot of that. I get a lot of that no matter where I go.
Right.
Foxes, you bet. I remember Foxes, you bet. I still use. My grandparents wouldn't let anybody use anything else.
Right. Are you still mainly East Coast? Or are you all over the country now?
Our primary region is in the Northeast, but we ship everywhere. We have some segments of our business that go all over the country, and our consumer products, the stuff you find in the supermarket, that stuff is should be in every supermarket around the country, or most of them.
I was reading on your website that it was actually way more recently than I expected. When you moved, you used to have glass jars, which I don't think I ever saw. I grew up in the South, and that you moved to the plastic squeeze container that I recognize. But it was like in 2006. But the big wait was that you were waiting to see if you needed to change the recipe, the formula.
When we changed, and it was one of the first jobs I did here, was changing that over. And it had a lot to do with being able to get the glass and being able to not be cost prohibitive.
Uh-huh.
And so one of the things that we insisted on, we said, look, people are going to go, what do you mean it's not in the glass jar anymore? So the first thing that we did was we made sure that the ingredients stayed the same, that the formula stayed the same. I mean, we tested every possibility to make sure that we had as little impact on the product as we could. But going to the plastic was, unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on how you look at it, you had no choice.
It was like an old screw top glass jar, and you would pour it into like your glass of seltzer and milk, I imagine. I don't remember seeing them.
It's funny. When we sell through a lot of kosher distributors, and we are in the supermarkets, never knew where to put us. So sometimes we'd be with the ice cream topping, sometimes we'd be with the ethnic food section, sometimes
really?
We'd be with chocolate syrup.
That's funny.
And they weren't, because it was this bizarre jar
right.
that you never really knew what it was. And so as soon as we moved to the plastic squeeze bottles, they said, oh, it's chocolate syrup, okay. And they knew exactly where to put it.
With the Nestle Quick strawberry.
Hiss, boo.
No, we're right next to it. And so do you know, the UBET came along maybe 30 years after the company was founded. Like, where did that come from? Who decided to add that to the name?
That would have been my grandfather.
Your grandfather. Do you know why?
That's actually one of the few stories that my father remembers to tell me. And he said that, you know, when my grandfather went to come into this business, before he came into this business, he went to Texas to try his hand at prospecting for oil. And wound up losing
product.
Everything, except for the phrase, you bet.
From Texas.
And used it so much that it became the name for the chocolate syrup.
It's brilliant.
He had to come back with something.
Right. And there was a point where there were you bet delivery trucks.
There were, but there still are.
Pictures. Oh, there are. They still say you bet?
We still have trucks with our logos printed on them. Once upon a time, we had all of our trucks that did our wrap business, and then we went to the local markets for our trucking. I mean, once upon a time, the seltzer guys used to deliver, and they had our logos on their trucks as well. Now we have... Our trucks look a little bit different than they did back in the 1950s, but we have regular trucks. But the first thing we do when we get a new truck is we get our logos printed on the side, make it nice and easy to know who we are.
I actually still get seltzer delivered from Gomberg in Canarsie.
Uh-huh.
So I think the very first thing I did with my first delivery was, of course, make a chocolate egg cream. Like your grandfather, have you always been in the family business making syrups and toppings, or did you go off and prospect oil too?
I went off and prospect oil too.
What did you do in between?
My father, his belief was that if we're going to do this, we're going to do it for the right reasons. And so he insisted that my brothers and I, that we would graduate from high school, go to college, get whatever degrees we wanted, go for whatever extra degrees we wanted, and work. work for X amount of time, and after you've pursued whatever it is you're going to pursue, then if you're still interested, you can come and talk. And I worked actually in the tech industry in advertising. And I wasn't enamored. I wasn't thrilled. I was learning a very myopic view of how things worked. And I got to a point where I turned around and I said something to my father, and my father says, okay, so now that you've been a manager, now that you've been a director, now that you've been in working, you want to learn what business really is? I've got a job for you. Now, keep in mind that my first job was routing trucks, filling bags on a bag-in-a-box line, dumping bottles onto a conveyor belt. I did it all. I've done everything under the sun. And then he said, "Here, now switch us to plastic," and went away on vacation.
Did you start filling bottles when you were younger, in high school or junior high school, or that's what you did after you came back from advertising?
Both. When I was in high school, I would work summers, and I would run the line. I would put bottles on the conveyor belt. I would stack. I would, pick orders. I would go out with the salespeople to help carry cases when they had to make special deliveries. And then when I came back afterwards, my father said, if you want to understand this job, you will do every part of this job.
Right.
And that's what I did. My shipping manager goes on vacation. I route the trucks. I manage the warehouse. My plant manager goes on vacation. I figure out the scheduling. I figure out what needs to get done.
How many people do you employ?
We have about 20 or so full-time people here.
It's pretty amazing. I don't know what you did in advertising, but I feel like you're spending all this time in advertising, and then your own family has one of the most important things in that industry, which is an incredibly well-known brand. It's like you already had it right there at your fingertips.
I worked in the technology side. So I was all about the back end technology, and then my father says, now you can put it to use. Now you can come here and do something else.
When you were growing up, did people know what your family did for a living? Were they impressed, or surely when your father was growing up, then everybody knew what it was.
Oh, everybody certainly. Mm-hmm. When I was growing up, I had most of my teachers that first day of class would go down that list, and they would take that pause, and they would put two and two together, and then after class they would go, "Fox is you, Ben, right?" That was always the moment where I knew whether or not I was going to do well in that class or poorly.
They would really recognize. That's Brooklyn. You're going to school in Brooklyn.
No, I grew up on Long Island.
On Long Island, but people would actually recognize. They would know Foxes. They would automatically assume.
They would that's take a amazing. Gamble. I mean, my parents, I believe, moved to Long Island before I was born, but probably not that much. They lived in Queens. My father grew up in Brooklyn, and then my parents married. I believe they lived in Queens for a while, and then moved to Long Island. And I have two older brothers. I'm the youngest of three. So by the time that I came into the school system, a lot of those teachers were used to seeing my name, or my last name, as it is, in the school system, and going, "Wait a minute, I know who that is."
Would you have to make egg creams for show and tell?
Nope.
No, never?
The first egg cream I made, I was in my mid-20s.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and then when we come back, I want you to tell me that story. This is Meet Your Maker on HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
We'll be right back. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef. Pasture raised on 150,000 acres in Central California. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, free-range, sustainably produced, humane. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, the authentic flavor of the American West.
Welcome back to Meet Your Maker every Thursday at 3 p.m. Today, our guest is Kelly Fox. He's the fourth generation maker of Fox's You Bet Chocolate Soda, and he was just about to tell us about the first egg cream he ever made, shockingly late in life. Kelly, are you there?
It was a bit of a disaster. It's not the first I've seen them made. My parents had made them, and I had had them before, but the very first one that I made was I went to a telethon that a relative of mine asked me if I would go and answer some phones. And my father, actually, they asked my father, and he was out of town. And so I went. And apparently the camera crew had heard of Fox's You Bet. They all had, you know, their roots in the soda industry. And so they came and said to me, "You're Fox's You Bet. We happen to have seltzer and chocolate and milk and the pretzel and everything here. Make us an egg cream." And if I tell you that there's not a little bit of pressure about guys who've been doing this their entire lives, yeah, looking at me, and I did it. I can't guarantee that I did it right. I can't guarantee that I did it to as well as I would do it today, but I did it.
I cannot believe that you did not have to make one. It seems like you would have been trotted out from like first grade on to do that for your class.
You know, a lot of people can't get past the seltzer and chocolate milk.
Right.
And it's not until they try one that they go, "Oh, that's pretty cool. Make me another."
So now, I'm sure you've had to go through this many times, but how do you make one these days?
How do I make one,
mm-hmm,
these days?
Yeah, what's your preferred?
And people will disagree with me. People are bound to disagree with me. I put the chocolate in first. I put the milk in, and then I spray it with the seltzer while I'm stirring it fast. I still have a siphon bottle at home. I've heard it told a lot of different ways. I've heard people say you put the chocolate in last so that you get a different kind of foamy head. But the way that I always did it was chocolate, milk, and then stir it while hitting it with the pressurized bottle. It gets a nice foamy head on there, and that's my egg cream.
And I remember hearing that people argue that it was different. Have you heard that people in the Bronx did it a different way than people in Brooklyn? Like, you could tell where they were from by the way they made their egg cream.
Yes, and that's why I say people will definitely disagree with me. Some people say that you put the milk in, and then you hit it with the pressurized seltzer, and while you're spinning it, you pour the chocolate syrup in so that the head comes up and it's not, it's different color,
right,
or different consistency. I don't know.
It's so funny.
It's the way I make it is really just the way I've always been taught to make it. So,
and who
I don't know where that makes me from.
Who taught you?
My parents.
Your parents.
My father. My father. When I was younger, I watched him make it a couple of times, and so that's where I learned.
I'm impressed that you're in many family businesses by the third or fourth generation, because I've written about so many of them here in New York City. That's where the company, where things, where it often ends. And it's impressive to me that for the fourth generation, you've decided to stay and work there.
You know, I think that it has a lot to do with the richness of the history. It also has to, it's a huge credit to my father as well, because growing up, he made sure that my brothers and I had a very firm understanding of this was, you know, our livelihood. This was what his father had done and what his father before him, and that this was what he did for a living, and that we would come to visit him or to work with him, and that we would work with him for the summer, and that was great. And he worked us, and it wasn't like, you know, go sit in the office and answer phones, but after we were done, his comment to us and each one of us individually was, "I don't want you here, though. I want you to go pursue something else and do something that makes you worth having here.
Uh-huh.
And then come talk to me." And it really, it ingrained itself to me, at least, because I found that no matter what I did after college, no matter what I did throughout school, there was always in the back of my mind was, okay, I'm learning this. What else could I be learning? What else could I be doing? And so when my father and I sat down to talk about me coming in to work with him, it was the right opportunity at the right time.
Do you remember when he told you you had, now, okay, so go turn that glass bottle into plastic. Did you have any idea how
Not
to begin?
Clue. Not even vaguely a clue. He said, here's the bottle that I kind of want. You figure it out. And I did. I called up all of our vendors. I called up all of our people. I said, I need a cap that goes with this. I need labels that go with this. I found out who our relationships were with all the different vendors that we had. Got an idea of all the different things that needed to go into our line. A lot of it from going to the supermarkets and picking stuff up off the shelves and saying, okay, so we need one of these, and we need one of these, and we need one of these. Figuring out the things that worked and didn't work. I mean, obviously, I had my father as a reference. I had my plant manager as a reference. I had my production manager as a reference. And we all put our heads together. But my father really stepped back and said, obviously, I'm not going to let this be a disaster. It's not going to fail. But as long as you're not, you know, crashing into any icebergs, let's see you do it.
Was it a difficult?
Fortunately, it worked out.
Was it a difficult decision to stay in Brooklyn for four generations?
No,
you've always been going to stay.
This is where we are. You know, we're a part of the community here. We've always been a part of the community here. We've seen this community change for good, for bad, for whatever it is, and we're a part of Brooklyn as much as Brooklyn is a part of us. And to stay here is a no-brainer. I mean, we're happy where we are. We enjoy being here, and we enjoy being part of Brooklyn.
It seems like it's like an iconic Brooklyn product. It's an iconic New York City product. An iconic product from a period of time as well.
This is true. We certainly have a very long history. In 1900, I look for to see if I could find any like even lithographs of what the horse and carriage must have looked like at the time that it was being delivered. But the best I can do is the truck that's actually on our website, and that was our first delivery truck. Amazes me.
And it was made in wooden kegs in your great grandfather's basement. What was it? Was it delivered in glass jars at that point?
Had to have been. It was in 1900. It wouldn't have been in plastic. That's for sure. Everything was in glass jars. Everything we made was in glass jars back then.
Would they returnable? Would you refill them the way you would a seltzer? You would.
Oh, absolutely.
That's so amazing.
Even the soda that we used to sell was in glass. Glass gallons, returnable glass gallons. You would get them back, you would sanitize them and wash them and rinse them and refill them and take a deposit. I would assume you take a deposit on them. They had to have been deposit bottles.
And this is, you were saying to me earlier, this is your busy time of year?
Yes. I mean, we sell, I mean, obviously we're busy all year long producing, but during the summer months when it starts to get warmer, we make a lot of slush syrups. We make a lot of we sell ice cream toppings and slush syrups and Italian ice bases. And a lot of the ice cream guys or the summer concession people, they all open up around mid-May. And so in that point in time, they're geared up, and they go straight through until about the beginning to middle of August, at which point the weather starts to look like it's about to turn. Everybody's getting ready to go back to school. So, you know, we get a bump in this time of the year when the weather is with us and all the ice cream guys come back from wherever it is they disappear to.
And are you coming up with new flavors every year based on demand and trends?
We try. Look, my kids are young, so it's very helpful. They're my unofficial research and development department. I've got three daughters who, they come to me and they go, Daddy, I want that. It's bright, bright green.
Which flavor is that? Is that pickle? That would be a very Brooklyn 2012 flavor.
Like a sour apple. I don't know. I look at what they want. You know, they're big fans of the sky blue raspberry, that electric
with two
blue
Z's.
Color.
Actually, speaking of flavors, can you define how you bet chocolate syrup, the classic? Can you define how it's different than other chocolate syrups? Do you have a way of describing it?
It's some milk chocolate syrup.
Milk chocolate. There you go.
And if you look at most of the other things on the market, they are not a milk chocolate. They're a dark chocolate or a bittersweet chocolate, which makes us a very different taste and look to everything else.
And that's always been the case? It's always been milk chocolate?
Yep.
And any idea why?
I'd have to ask my great-grandfather.
My great-grandfather. He's the H. I should have... Actually, that's the correct name of the company, right? H. Fox.
It's H. Fox and Company, yes. He would have been the H.
The H. And then... You're the... It was... Wait. What were the names? There was an Irving.
It was... Irving was my grandfather. David is my father. My great-great-grandfather, I'm not sure what his name was.
When did you... do you know...
Harris was my... Was that my great-grandfather or my great-great-grandfather?
There were two H's?
Herman was
Herman.
My... Yep, there were two H's.
It's the founder.
Herman was my great-grandfather, and Harris was his father.
At that point, when they began, were you one of many syrup and iced desserts?
Sure.
That's so funny to think about. Everyone delivering everything by horse-drawn cart.
Well, there was your market was basically your delivery area. So, you know, every 10, 20 blocks, there was probably another syrup or fruit guy. And for years, that held true. And then there was a consolidation of everything at some point where a lot of, you know, some people didn't stay in business, some people couldn't stay in business, and or there were, you know, purchases or mergers and what have you. And, yeah, at one point or another, they were everywhere.
Do you still have a relationship with any of the seltzer? There's maybe five seltzer delivery guys left.
I still speak to Gomberg.
That's not. It can't be too far from you.
Nope, they're 10 minutes away.
You're like the pair, the living history. It's amazing that you are both still there.
And they're terrific people. They really, you know, I can't speak highly enough about them. We call, and I go over there whenever I'm driving around. Whenever I have to go and call on customers, I always make sure to try and stop over just to say hello.
He's maybe second or third generation too, right?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe some of the delivery men may have even driven a U-Bet truck at some point.
Oh, that's possible.
I bet so.
Sure.
I've seen some.
I don't think I've ever asked him that one.
Let's find out.
Remember.
My seltzer man, he actually has the oldest existing the old panel truck that Ronnie.
Yep.
Yep.
They still have.
I wish he delivered U-Bet.
I'm sure that he could.
Yes, I should. I should totally ask. I'd be a tip in it.
I know that some of the guys who deliver the seltzer, still, some of them actually will take chocolate syrup with them. They will take the U-Bet with them.
Oh, really? But just to make it themselves?
No, so that they can deliver you your seltzer and your Fox's U-Bet. The two go so well together.
Oh, you said you had daughters.
I have three daughters.
Three daughters. So it's possible that there will be a woman running Fox's U-Bet at some point in 2 decades from now?
Absolutely.
Very cool.
My oldest is only 7, so it'll take some time for her. But, oh, yeah, I've got three good, great girls, and hopefully one of them will one day turn around and go, okay, is it my turn yet? At least one of them.
Have you taught them how to make egg creams?
Too young.
My middle daughter's
5, and she likes watching them be made.
Uh-huh.
But she doesn't want to taste one. She doesn't want to have one. She doesn't want to, you know, she's not so sure that she wants one. My oldest, she kind of still looks on from the side and goes, maybe. Maybe you'll convince me. It's got chocolate in it, so that's a plus, but it's also got seltzer in it, so I'm not so sure. They don't drink soda, so... There's that hesitancy, and the baby's only 1, so
you could actually make them. You could make them a sour apple or a purple raspberry egg cream.
I could. I could. I don't think they drink that either. Fortunately for me, my daughters really don't. They haven't been taught soda yet. I figure at 7 years old, they've got some time before they can worry about that.
Yes. Well, they have until 20 to master the egg cream, just like their dad.
Exactly. Right now, I will make them slushes. Those I'll make them any day of the week, and they will ask for them every day of the week.
Well, with that, that has been Meet Your Maker. Kelly, thank you so much. For anyone listening in the New York City area, remember to buy Fox's You Bet because it's locally made. Thank you.
Thank you. We trust in them above instinct, a seed objective review.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our programs archived on our website or by searching iTunes for Heritage Radio Network. You can find us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website. Thanks for listening.